Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
What have you done for me to talk to you?
Ah, I see. I see.
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Let's ride, et cetera, et cetera. Please be kind to others and take them into consideration.
I don't even know how to follow that up. Let's ride, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, man. There's something else to go there at some point.
Yeah, well, okay. Not that being the placeholder. That's amazing.
I can only ride it into the ground.
You can't be proud of that. You can't be proud of that. I assume you are doing well. I am hurting figuratively and literally. Hope Jalen Hurts recovers from the sprained shoulder, if that's all it is. But we will...
This man is down in the dumps about the Eagles. They got 98 wins this year. If you don't, man.
98. Look, man.
Man. What's on the sheet, man? What we got?
Let's on this. Well, I guess while we're on injuries, because we could start with Anthony Davis being out indefinitely with a foot injury. That sucks for Anthony Davis, who was in the midst of one of, if not the best season of his career individually, certainly on one of the most dominant stretches that he's had throughout his career. Was averaging north of 30 points per game over a multi-game stretch, and now he is out indefinitely. One, how do Lakers even begin to adjust without Anthony Davis? And two, what do you think this does to their plans to kind of add reinforcements to the roster?
Well, the number one thing is I just want him to be able to get right more than anything. Like, for him to go through injury after injury after injury, I can't imagine having to go out again after the stretch of basketball that he's played personally. So I hope that he's able to find a way and just get his body right and be able to just play basketball without consistently having to go off to the shelf. Now, as far as the Lakers go, they have who they have. And the mission is the mission. And they're going to have to try and get there as they can. So it's going to be more Thomas Bryant. It's going to be more Wendy and Gabriel. LeBron. Like, that. This is what they got.
More Damian Jones.
This is who they have. And so they're going to have to find a way to make it work. That's a big piece of their offense that they're missing. It's a big piece of their defense. There's no real plug and play anyways. And at this point in the season, what are you adding? You gonna add another big? You got about two or three over there that you can play. You gonna add another wing? You got guys that fell out the rotation. I don't know what you're adding.
I think it's just the infusion of talent, if you can. I guess for me, the discussion around the Lakers have been, what do they do with one or both of their future first-round picks? Whether that's part of a Russ deal or whether that's using those picks in conjunction with other pieces on the roster to kind of upgrade around that three of Russ, Anthony Davis, and LeBron. And can you make the push? Are the Lakers good enough to warrant making that kind of push? And with Anthony Davis now out of the equation for at least a month, and, you know, per Brian Windhorst, he's saying like the foot he's hurt is a little bit worse than they're letting on. So I don't know what indefinitely may just mean indefinitely. We'll see. Like, I wonder what that does to their plans. Like, do they get more aggressive in light of AD being out? Or do you say, well, hey, this is where we're all right now. We're out of the play-in right now. We're now down Anthony Davis for an extended stretch. Let's just hold. Like, is that where you go? I'm just kind of keeping an eye on that from the Lakers' standpoint.
I mean, it would probably influence them if the right deal is there to think about it less, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, let's do it. Let's jump on that. As opposed to, hold our cards. But I don't think it's going to be an all-in situation where they just make a move to make a move. I think the plan is going to be the same, but they may be more willing to do something that will help them out both now and later. But I don't think this is a, hey, let's get someone for right now. I mean, the truth is the truth. They're a game and a half out of play-in. So you don't want to use all your assets for something that is trying to save this season. You want help, but, you know, you got to keep the vision in mind.
I got you. On the positive side of the injury spectrum, as we were recording on a Monday afternoon, the Monday night game of slate of games have not started yet. I can speak. Joe Ingles making his return, making his season debut for the Milwaukee Bucks against the New Orleans Pelicans. Steve, how do you see Joe Ingles factoring into the Bucks rotation?
Is Game of Slates a spinoff?
Yes.
No, I think I'm interested to see what it looks like with Ingles in Milwaukee. I think we have talked about what he can provide for this team. I'm interested to see what the minutes look like, what he looks like, what his usage is going to be at the start. I mean, it's going to take some time for him to ramp back up. But, you know, do we see him on ball? Do we see him moving without the ball in some handoff actions? What's that look like? And then who's he playing with? And then what's it look like defensively? So those are probably the things I'm opening up my eyes to look and see, okay, what could this potentially be? You know, we actually have some film to match some of our ideas. I know you're excited about it. What are your thoughts? What seasoning can Joe Ingles bring to the Bucks?
The exact type of seasoning is unclear at the moment. We will circle back on that as we get some film in the docket. But no, I am excited for the addition. I do think his shooting alone, I think, is going to help open up some space for the other guys, depending on who he's playing with. I think he's going to make life a little bit easier for the Stars to operate, assuming that he gets some time with them. I do want to see what his actual on-ball usage is going to be. Will this be high pick and roll? Will we see some lower pick and rolls? What kind of off-ball movement will it be used in? Because Milwaukee's offense, from a system perspective, is not what it was in Utah with Quinn Snyder. So interested to see how they integrate him into the offense and what they're already trying to do. The defense is going to be the big thing, because I think, one, just where he is at this current stage of his career, plus the layoff, like, I expect some rust there, and I expect that to not look as great early on. What level the defense ends up being at is where we get to see how valuable the signing will be within a playoff context. Because, you know, I don't really care too much the first week or so. If we get into February and March and the defense is a big question mark, then that kind of lowers my feeling on the signing itself, because I think he is very additive offensively. I think the playmaking and I think the shooting can be very important. If he can't move laterally anymore, then I don't think you can close with him, and thus that kind of lowers the overall value of this kind of flyer. So I'll be keeping an eye on what it looks like early on, but really having the eye moving forward.
It's interesting. I think that maybe because you're higher on it in a sense, because for me, Joe Ingles is a bonus for the Bucks. Like, I think he's just a plus to what they've built. Hey, we also have Joe Ingles. We could also put him in a lineup. We could also throw him out there. And if not, we still have all the stuff we had before. You know? So for me, it's just like, okay, what does Joe Ingles bring? Does that add more versatility to a deeper wing roster than I had begun to think? I guess that's the other part to do. How do they, like, who's going to get cut out of the rotation? Because eventually, at some point, you're going to have to shorten this thing down. And you've got a few options that you feel comfortable with. So I guess I'm interested to see how does that all shake out.
I think if nothing else, because, like, we've seen some Wes as of late, like, maybe that's a way to say, all right, Wes, if you're not playing, if you have a back-to-back, Wes, you're playing on the first one, not the second one. Joe, you're going to get those minutes. Or as they continue to work Chris Middleton back, like, okay, you played 34 minutes on Tuesday. Let's keep you around 27, 28 on Thursday. And then we kind of configure the rotation. We get some Joe minutes in there. So I don't know if he walks into, he's playing 18 minutes a night. Like, I think they are going to try to slow play, especially, like, this is a, what, 10-month recovery for Joe Ingles off an ACL? Like, that's technically kind of quick based on other ACL injuries. So I don't anticipate them just going full head of steam with him. I think they're going to work him in slowly. So just examining what those bite-sized minutes are going to look like early on is going to be pretty fun for me. I do agree with you. Like, this is an additive overall. Like, if it doesn't work out, they do have a lot of options, particularly with their small ball units. But if Joe Ingles does hit, like, it does give them an added added layer of playmaking, an added layer of shooting, and a little bit more size than a Pat Connaughton or a Grayson Allen or even a Wes Matthews. So you do close. If you do throw them in the closing line, if you have a little bit more to work with from a size perspective, and I think that can help them defensively. But we'll just have to see how he holds up on that end. Last news note I want to hit on. This was some news from late last week we didn't get to touch on. Former Mavs guard Tyrell Terry, he was an early second round pick in 2021. He has announced his retirement from the NBA, citing the anxiety that the league and just basketball in general brought him, kind of led him to that decision. First and foremost, that is incredibly brave of him and incredibly mature of him to make that kind of decision that young and that early into a basketball career relative to others. And so I applaud him for that. I also hope he gets the peace and lives the life that he wants to live outside of basketball. And I'm excited to see what opportunities open up for him beyond basketball. So I'm going to be keeping an eye on that for sure. And beyond that, like it just kind of made me sit and think a little bit. Because when this first came down the pipeline, I was like, wow, that's a name I haven't heard in a minute. And this is surprising. And then beyond that, and I think I had this conversation with you during one of our watch parties when we first saw the news, where I was like, this should be a moment to where like we all just kind of collectively evaluate where we are in the sports space. And this isn't just limited to sports. But I just think of a guy that young saying like the external pressures like turned something that brought me joy into something that gave me a whole bunch of anxiety. And like, just kind of made me think like, how do we factor in to people feeling like that, to players feeling like that?
You got to understand players to be able to get there. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things. To me, this is bigger than just basketball or sports. This is a life deal.
Yeah.
Perception is the age we live in, but perception isn't the most important thing. You have to feel right with yourself. You have to feel right within yourself. You have to be able to understand who you are. Self-awareness is difficult, and life is not linear, even though it seems like it should be that way. You have these hurdles or these things that you do and you succeed with and you put them on your resume, but ultimately everything goes up and down. And so for him to recognize the position that the game had put him in, the thing about it is he's probably one of the few to step out and say that. Like the thing about playing basketball, and you can ask anyone who's played or anyone who's climbed up that ladder, it's very hard to do it without bumps and bruises. At some point, you're going to have to sacrifice. You know, ask basketball players what their holidays look like.
Yeah.
And that starts like earlier than most probably imagine. Oh, wait, what? Are we practicing on things? Oh, yeah. we fly about? Okay, got it. And then the mental aspect of it, the toll that it takes, and it's kind of like a different world. I'm kind of rambling, but like you see it more once you stop playing basketball. Like, oh, I can't just yell at someone and then go right to lunch with them like I did at practice.
Yeah, a little bit different, yeah.
Oh, probably rage in the locker room. I can't rage clean and do laundry. It doesn't work. But for, you know, I felt for him because when you put that much work in to this and understanding what it is and what you're trying to accomplish and feeling like you're carrying the pressure of having to succeed at one specific thing, it could hurt you, especially if there's hurdles. Like there's so much self-doubt that goes into this game. And there's so much confidence that we can see, but there's so much angst and anxiety and self-doubt and work that you put in. And you have to think like a maniac, Like just for example, go ask the worst player on a team, go to the worst player on any team at any level and tell them they're terrible and watch their reaction. Even if they know what their role is and they accept it, they can't hear that from you. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of mindset you have to have. And for me, I guess like that's a really mature thing to understand at that age. Because it takes a long time to understand that in life.
That it does.
Your path is your path. And it's hard to accept it when it feels like you're needing to chase perfection or you needing to be something. The only thing you have to be is you. You just be the best you can be. So at the end of the day, that's all you can be. And I hope that he finds the peace from this decision. Because, I mean, he could have quietly just not let us know. But I think it's something that more people need to know about. People need to talk about. You know, we say check in on your people. You got to check in on everybody. Sports is not a magical Band-Aid. It does not just mean because they are able to live out a dream or do something that is incredible that they also don't have human thoughts and problems and issues, but they don't get treated as such because, oh no, you hoop. Yeah, but I'm sad.
Yeah, like that. What does that mean?
I remember when I transferred from Arizona State to UNLV, I was broken by the game. I felt like a failure, a much smaller scale. But the basketball can make you so unhappy if you're in the wrong spot. But that applies to so many things in life, whether it's your job, whether it's family, whether it's where you live, whatever it is, you can want something so bad and just be in the wrong spot for it to happen. And sometimes it's hard to evaluate that part. You kind of just point the finger at you. When you point the finger at you, it can get tricky.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I'm right there with you, like much smaller scale. Like I know how I feel entering the pod. Like, holy crap, I got to nail it today. I can't imagine I don't know how I deal with it if like the success of the pod factored into like my family life or anything of that sort. Like if there were even higher stakes on that. And so again, I don't know his specific family, his specific family situation or if he had, you know, what kind of responsibility he had financially with his family as he made the career in basketball. So I won't speak to that. But like just the pressures of being a professional athlete, man. And you hit on it early. Like these guys make it to the league or they get these contracts and it feels like people at large stop treating them like people. It's like, what are you complaining about? You make X amount of dollars or you don't have to work 60 hours a week at a job. You play basketball while completely dismissing like the mental side of that. And I appreciate Tyrell not only making this decision for himself, because that's what's most important, but also like spotlighting that and saying, hey, no, I am making this decision and here's why. Because while he put this out, he is not the only player to have stepped away and felt like that. He may be one of the few that has put out a message, and the message is on his Instagram account if you want to read it for yourself. But like, he's not the only player to feel like that. He's not the only player to feel like that now. And so I'm glad he had the courage and was transparent enough to let us into that window. And I hope, one, that he's okay. Two, I do hope it kind of leads to like a mass, like, hey, how are we treating people? As you said, this is bigger than basketball and bigger than sports. It should flow into all aspects of life. But even for just the basketball fans listening to this podcast, like, okay, how do I factor into that kind of ecosystem? How am I treating people? What kind of energy am I putting into the world? Like, I know when I saw that, it made me kind of take a step back and kind of think about like my place in this.
Nah, I can understand that. I can understand that. Life's a journey. Just got to embrace it. Happiness comes in different shapes and sizes. One step at a time, just put the work in. It'll pay off.
There we go. Sage Jones Jr. in the building. We are here.
Just call me Sage.
Yeah, you know, smart guy. You got the good advice and the good words.
I just got gray hair. That's rude.
Ah, I see. Well, with that, we are going to transition into the teams that have impressed us. Steve, what teams have caught your eye as of late?
I am in an Empire State of Mind.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Let's talk Knicks.
Okay.
How do you feel about the Knicks, by the way? Real quick before I go.
I am impressed.
Oh, wow. All right. Let's have some fun then. So there's a sense of belief with the Knicks, right? And a 6-game win streak will do that for you. And I think on this very podcast, I asked the same question a few weeks ago or some sorts. And I was like, what are the Knicks? Well, they're the 6th seed right now, folks.
Answers that, huh?
Yeah, I think they're up to number 9 in defensive rating since December 4th. I think they're only giving up 97 points a game. Check this out, Nikias.
Okay.
The Knicks are 10-4 with the starting lineup of Jalen Brunson, Quentin Grimes, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson.
Not bad.
Let that sink in. That lineup feels as close to the blend that the Knicks have been trying to get to since that initial playoff run with Tibbs. They could do enough of the defensive things that they need to do while also adding some of the offensive things that they've been looking for or searching or trying to get to. It also helps when your guys are just playing better. RJ Barrett.
Welcome.
He scored 20 plus in 5 straight games, Nikias. Do you know how many times he did that before the month of December?
Sheesh.
Just scored 20 plus.
Oh, just 20 plus, period.
Not even in a row.
Okay. 4.
No, he did it 10 times.
Oh, 10. Okay.
But he's done it 5 in a row.
Okay. Undersold it.
We've talked about Jalen Brunson and the impact that he's had. I want to talk about Quentin Grimes. Because Quentin Grimes is making a difference. They can now put him on whoever the guy is defensively. And having someone who can do that really changes the math for your defense. For me, recency bias, but seeing the work he did against Halliburton and just some of the effort plays he makes when he's guarding some of these guys, the activity on the ball, the work to contain penetration, the work to contest every shot, the screen navigation, like his ability to work on ball, stay attached to bodies, that's one of those things that helps a drop with Mitchell Robinson, makes that work. Being able to defend one-on-one, so it's not always automatic help and rotation, and guys can actually load up and show help and have timing on their help as opposed to, oh, snap, I know I need to go now. Wait, should I go now? Any of that stuff. And on the other end, he fits with that starting lineup in a way that I didn't necessarily anticipate because I didn't see the defense taking this level of a leap. I just thought, okay, he's going to make some shots, which he is, shooting, I believe, 43.9% from 3 in the month of December on about 5 attempts.
Yeah, 50% from 3 on nearly 6 attempts during the win streak.
There we go. So he can handle the ball. In theory, you have 4 people who can do things offensively. If there is drive and kick, he can either make the shot or drive a closeout. And I like that. Hey, you mentioned it, but Julius Randle playing better. 27-11 with 4.2 assists over his last 6 games. Did you know there's only one New York Knick who has had 34 points, 15 plus rebounds, 5 assists, and made 6 threes in a game?
Wow, that's impressive.
It's Julius Randle.
The one, the only. The man, the myth, the legend.
I don't know what made me jump out my seat more watching the Pacer game. His getting doubled the whole game? Him driving and kicking or dunking on Miles Turner? He's still Julius Randle. So bear with me.
Are we going down the rabbit hole?
No, but some of the decisions appear to be a smidge quicker. If he's bringing it up, he'll go right to the post up. He's still going to survey because that's his game. But there's an effort from him to put his head down and at least try and get a paint touch before he gets to the fadeaway or something like that. He's becoming a pressure point again. And, you know, shoot, he's shooting 46% on pull-up twos. There's something there. The Knicks as a whole, the defense being better helps them because guess what that means they can do, Nikias?
Get out and run.
Yes, and when they get out and run, they look a lot better. And there feels like there's more of an emphasis in the half court, past the pace, past tempo, to just drive more. Let's just put our head down and drive and force help that way. And I think it helps or works with that lineup. Overall, defensively, I think the defense has been stronger. I think they've been more consistent. They've been more sharp. Help is in, and they get back out. You're seeing multiple efforts and rotations. They still do have their breakdowns. It still can be an adventure. Drop is the base. It can be exploded. Do have times where Hartenstein and Julius Randle are out there together, and boy, is that interesting.
Yeah.
But I think you mix those guys playing better, a little bit stronger defense, and the shortened rotation. Got to tip your cap, Tibbs. I like adding the energy of McBride and Sims with Quickly, with Hardenstein. I like the flexibility to keep a starter in there, like RJ Barrett with that lineup. Seems fun to me.
Same.
So I've enjoyed that. A little worried about what it looks like in a playoff setting right now. I don't know what the ceiling is, but this is a much different conversation for the Knicks, and they deserve a tip of the cap.
Yeah. This is not the conversation we were going to be having about the Knicks even 3 weeks ago. So the fact that they played themselves here, like, that's a testament to them. I am so glad that you started out with Quentin Grimes. One, 100% agree with you. He has been killing it. And one thing I wanted to note as well, because you mentioned what him being solid defensively does. I think just on a even more basic level, if he's taking on tough matchups like Tyrese Haliburton, RJ Barrett doesn't. And I think that factors in a little bit to RJ having a little bit more juice offensively. The drive's hitting a little bit more. He's knocking down threes. He has more legs in the jumper. It's never been a question of if RJ could defend or if RJ could shoot or if RJ could drive. You're asking him to do all three and do so with high usage. That gets a little bit iffy considering how the Knicks were playing on both ends on both earlier in the year. You take a little bit of pressure off of him. The shooting bounces back. Now he looks like the player that got the extension that he got over the offseason. And so I've been impressed with the play of RJ. I did touch on Julius during one of the players that impressed segments, I think, last week. So won't hang too much longer on that one. But he's been killing it. It's a lot different when he's making quicker decisions, as you said, and when the jumper is going in particular, because he wants to mix that in. He wants to be able to put a shoulder in your chest. And now you're sagging off to kind of prepare yourself for the body bump. Now he's sprinkling in jumpers. And now you don't know what to do with him. You send help, now you can pass it out. With that all falling, it's fun again. The center position is kind of where I have my eyes with the Knicks right now. I love what Mitchell Robinson does as a lob threat. I love what he brings on the offensive glass. Watching him as a screener still kind of frustrates me. And, like, it does get a little iffy with him in the drop. This is why I'm glad that the screen navigation in front of him has been so much better during this win streak. He hasn't had to work as hard. He hasn't been put in as many play between the ball handler, play between the roller situations. He didn't have to worry about getting hit with pump fakes, and now he's in foul trouble. And now it goes to Hardenstein, and the defense has been uneven, to say the least. But it just feels like Mitchell Robinson's been a little more solid, a little bit more comfortable. To the shortened rotation point, I do wonder what this looks like when Obi's back and what that may mean. Does Tibbs try to factor him back in? Because who he's been replaced with, I mean, obviously you're getting more Randle, you're getting more Robinson, you're getting more Jericho Sims. Like, these are all more defensive-minded players, even if they have some flaws. Not Randle, but Mitch with Robinson and Sims in particular. Like, I do wonder how they factor Obi back into it. But no, like, you pretty much hit on the major points. Knicks have been fun. They've been good. Defense has been solid. Nice to see RJ bounce back. Nice to see Julius Randle playing well. Jalen Brunson, at the very least in the conversation for the All-Star game, I feel like what he's done this year, like, he's been solid pretty much all year long. And now with the Knicks on this recent run of winning, like, it's more than time to talk about where he lands as a candidate for the All-Star team. It's keeping on him, just been solid. The drives have hit. What he does in the intermediate area of the floor is elite stuff with his floaters, with his footwork, short jumpers, all of that good stuff. You play drop against him, you're asking him to lead the dance. I just love that addition for the Knicks. He's been so solid for them. And so I think he deserves some love as well. Where are you on Emmanuel Quickly right now?
I'm still high. Mm-hmm. I don't have any issues. Why do you ask? I'm only curious because like, I'm not any higher or lower on him than I was. I think he's good. I think he has enough reps to do what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. I do. It just kind of feels like this is going to be what he's going to be for this team at this point. So I think there is more that he could do, but structurally, I don't know how much more he'll be able to. Mm-hmm. Where are you at with him?
Like, I'm in a similar spot. I asked because of how strongly he finished the second half of last year. It didn't come again. Like, the jumper just hasn't hit at the same rate as it did last year. I feel like defense has gotten better, which is important. He feels like the patience is continuing to grow with him in pick and roll. The shots just haven't fallen. And so that combined with, I think it was Fred Katz that had it first, that the Knicks were willing to move him in a deal for future first and stuff as they kind of gear up for the big move whenever they want to make it. And I was just kind of seeing like, okay, it feels like the Knicks feel like he's more expendable than I would think he is. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts on where you were with Quickley. Cause like, I don't feel like he's like, I definitely don't think he's a bad player.
No, but the weird part is it's funny. Sometimes you do the other things well, and then the one thing that got you here or helped you stand out kind of sits down for a little bit. I probably think he's just the most attractive piece. That isn't someone that's been obvious, you know? So it's probably a little bit easier to float that out. Like, hey, you could, maybe. The deal's right.
I got you. I was just curious on that front, but man, it's been a nice stretch for the Knicks, man. Did you have another team on your list?
I told you I was in an Empire State of Mind. Let's talk Nets.
All right. To the other side.
You know they're 17-7 with Jacques Vaughn as the coach?
That seems good.
You know they've won 13 of the last 16 games?
That also seems good.
Did you know that 13-3 mark is since November 16th, and that's the best record in the league since that date?
That would also appear to be good.
Did you know they're 12-3 in clutch games?
That would bode well, I feel.
I'm very intrigued by the Brooklyn Nets right now. And there's a couple reasons why. So don't worry. I won't go too long. Ben Simmons appears to be engaged, folks. And I just go, one, he had a behind-the-back move against Toronto. I was like, wait a minute. What's happening? What's happening here, bud? And then the Pistons game. Early on, he's backing down Isaiah Stewart on purpose and turning to a jump hook on purpose and scoring on purpose. And then later I see him screening for Kyrie. And then on defense, he's switching and containing penetration. And then later he has a post up and spins and draws help and kicks for three. And they made a basket. He pushed it in transition and hit Seth Curry for a three. What's happening here?
Ben Simmons is back? Question mark upward inflection?
Something like that. And then I look at some of the lineup combinations. And I said, oh, hey, Joe Harris, why don't you just come off the bench, man? Find your smile that way. They've got some lineup. They've got some lineup versatility. You know, we talked about the five. It's like, hey, we got Morris. We got Warren. We got Watanabe. We could just be long. We could just have better size. Combine that with some buy-in and we got a shot. And then you got whatever Kevin Durant is doing this season. Kevin Durant has been insane. Like insane, insane, insane. He's averaging 30 on 56.5% shooting from the field. And that's while he's shooting sub 40 from three. He's third in field goals made in the paint, non-restricted area. Second in mid-range field goals made. Leads the league in pull-up points per game. Shooting 55.4% on pull-ups. What do you do with that? So you're telling me it's going to be Kyrie running around making shots. Yeah, trying to play defense, running around making shots. This version of KD, who is just giving him everything you want and also will come off screens. Size and length for the most part. Am I falling for the Nets playoff formula pump fake again?
Okay, so one, before answering the question, this would be much better than the Wizards pump fake at the very least. So I would allow you to hit
man. That one. All right, man.
I just felt like that was fair. Two, I get it. Because, I mean, they have shot making at a premium with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Like, you could just stop there and just say, okay, they got enough shot creation there. If it's a close game, I am scared of the Brooklyn Nets. And then you add in Seth can also make shots. Yuta Watanabe, if they're closing with him, he's defended pretty well. And now I don't think he's missed the corner three since October. That's a solid option. Ben Simmons, if he's this engaged, which, you know, we should probably talk about the lineups with Ben Simmons and KD up front and then shooters around those two. I mean, yeah, I'd keep an eye on that, especially if Ben Simmons is doing this, if he's playing this assertively on both ends of the floor, like it becomes more tenable, which also allows me to say, hey, Kevin Durant's been really freaking good on defense this year. We should talk about that a little bit more, like collectively. Like what he's been able to do as a weak side rim protector. He's held up on switches. It's impressive in addition to what he's doing on the offensive end.
You know, my problem is though, that's kind of him though. Like once he did it in Golden State, I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
he just couldn't do it here because they ain't had the people. So, you know, yeah, please, let's talk more about Kevin Durant's defense. Don't get me wrong, but for me, I was like, oh, now he can actually do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of being the glue and the glue guy on defense.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask him to do. It just feels like as deep as the MVP race is this year, like I never want to say Kevin Durant is underrated because I think we all collectively understand how good he is and just how good his case is. But like 30 points on nearly 57% shooting from the floor, not just from two, but from the floor, while playing really good defense. And the Nets are basically on the door of the third seed in the East right now. Like as of the recording, they're three games out of the top seed in the East. And he's done this while waves arms wildly, everything else that's happened with this team this year. It's been a ridiculous season for Kevin Durant.
I'm going to break the format here real quick.
Okay.
Because this MVP thing is going to be disgusting.
Oh, absolutely.
It's disgusting. Just as a brief exercise, if you just think about it, you could probably put 10 to 12 names together. I think I get 10. In no particular order. Tatum, Giannis, KD, Embiid. Mm-hmm. I'm at 4, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Then there's Luka, Jokic, Devin Booker, Ja, Zion.
The South Carolina delegation. Love to see it.
Who else? Can I get a 10th in there? Did I just lie?
Did I just lie is amazing.
Did I just lie? Did I say KD?
I don't think you said Steph.
Steph Curry. There we go.
Granted, that's the other injury note you should have listened. You know, Steph Curry might be out for a while with the shoulder. That's less than ideal for Golden State. Ideal for Jordan Poole, it would appear, as he just shredded everyone. But continue.
No, that's nasty work, man. Like, it's nasty.
Yeah, good luck to the people with ballots this year. Because that doesn't seem like a fun time to have. Like, you have to distill that list to 5. Before even getting into what the order of 1 through 5 is, you have to get down to 5. Getting from 10 to 5 is going to be stress-inducing. Then you got to sort out the actual top 5. I do not envy that.
And Anthony Davis probably up there.
And
he got hurt.
Yeah, like that's incredibly tough.
All right. Speaking of incredibly tough, which team? Actually, no. I was going to ask you one question before I do that. How do you feel about Nick Claxton's defense this year?
I've liked the Nick Claxton defense this year. Keep him away from Joel Embiid, but like, I mean, keep everyone away from Joel Embiid when he's healthy. But I've enjoyed the Nick Claxton defense this year.
Good enough to be defensive player of the year?
I can't go that far, but I do think he's...
That's what he said.
Oh, well, you know, respectfully, I would say I don't know about that part, but he has been very good.
Okay. Any carnivals you want to talk about?
That's amazing. I'm going to leave that there. First, I want to give a quick shout out to the Philadelphia 76ers, who are winners of 4 straight. You talked about Embiid's place in the MVP running right now. 39-11 during the win streak, shooting 61% from the floor, over 60% from 3, though that's low volume, so you can leave that alone. The Harden Embiid pick and roll, kind of underwhelming statistically overall this year, but during this win streak, 1.17 points per possession when either one of those two shoot out of that pick and roll, which is pretty much the figure they were at last year when they were the most dominant pick and roll pairing in basketball when they got together. That's starting to perk up. James Harden just got back, and he is bombing away from 3. Not only bombing away from 3, this is something that you touched on during one of our most recent watch parties. The inside the arc scoring. This is something that you hit on during the watch party. This is something a friend of the program, Jackson Frank, just wrote about earlier today. The interior scoring for James Harden. Getting to the mid-range. Getting to the mid-post. Posting up dudes, period. He is reinventing himself on the fly. He is leaning into the 2-point scoring. And I, for one, am enjoying it.
Yeah, man, I just said it on the pod last week.
Yeah, you did.
Man, you don't be listening.
What you think?
I'm joking. No, but he's going to find a way. And hey, maybe I don't have to hit the turbo button all the time and try and drive and get a foul. Let me just get this post up. I can get right back to the step back. It's fun stuff.
Fun stuff, indeed. Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, I just want to throw out DeAnthony Melton averaging 21-6-4-3 during the win streak. Nearly 56% from 309 attempts. The defense has also been there. The shot making has continued. I'm going to ride that high until I can't ride it anymore. But no, just shout out to the Sixers, just chugging along in the Eastern Conference. They've dealt with a lot of injuries this year to a lot of their top guys. They're still waiting to get Tyrese Maxey back, but they are here. So we got the Sixers on a 4-game win streak. We got the Knicks on a 6-game win streak, I believe. We got the Nets on a 6-game win streak. You know who else is on a 6-game win streak, Steve?
Hold on. Let me check the standings real quick. Give me 1 second. A little refresh.
Okay. The Knicks are on a 7-game win streak. My apologies. 7 for the Knicks, 6 for the Nets. You know, take your time. We're going to be here. Take your time.
No, I found them.
Ah. The Orlando Magic.
All right.
Have won 6 straight games. They beat the Clippers in an overtime that I still don't understand how that happened, because Markelle Fultz just didn't pass Paolo the ball, and then the Clippers had the weirdest substitution pattern I've seen. Steve has left the stream. That's amazing. But I will continue. It's fine. I will march on. Beat the Clippers in overtime. 2 straight wins against the Toronto Raptors, which we'll talk about Toronto at some point, I am sure. Beat the Hawks, and then back-to-back wins against the Boston Celtics. During this win streak, they're 12th in offense. They are 5th in defense. They're 3rd in half-court defense. Top 10 offensive rebound rate during the stretch. Paolo continuing to just bully people. Gets to the rim, gets to the free throw line. Nearly 9 free throw attempts per game during the stretch. 23-7-4 your averages. He's shooting 47% from 3 on 5 attempts. He's been very good. Franz Wagner, we can just talk about the Wagners if you want to. Franz Wagner continued to dice dudes up. The drives are continuing to hit. More finishing craft. The kickouts have been there as well, but I've been really impressed with his aggression and his efficiency as a scorer. 3 ball hasn't fallen as of late, but you can't leave him open. Mo Wagner shooting 41% from 3 during his win streak, averaging 15-7, essentially holding up just enough defensively. There are still some pockets to attack, particularly when he's in a drop, but he is holding his own. I don't have to talk about Bol Bol and what he's been able to do, the grab-and-go threat, the shot-making, the offensive rebounding. Don't ask me about the defense in space. I don't want to talk about it, but Bol Bol continues to be fun. And the Orlando Magic, it would appear, are a little bit different when they have healthy guards. Come on down, Cole Anthony, and the shot-making. Come on down, Markelle Fultz, and the point-of-attack defense, and the drives. Pull-up is falling right now inside the arc. Not high volume. This is nice to see him taking them. But the pace that he plays with in pick and roll, his ability to find guys, his ability to get to the paint, the footwork, the craftiness, I am enjoying it. We're getting shots. We're getting closer four-quarter shots from Admiral Schofield during this stretch. Terrence Ross isn't hitting shots right now, but that's okay. I am sure that's going to bounce back. The Orlando Magic are defending, and they are closing out games right now. Fun stretch for a fun young team right now.
I have a question for you.
What's up?
You mentioned the guard play. And so overall, how have you felt about everyone's usage during this stretch? Do you feel confident about Orlando playing with purpose offensively right now? What's kind of jumped out to you there?
I think they're very much still trying to find a balance. Like, I do appreciate that the hierarchy seems clear most of the time. Like, this is Paolo, this is Franz. And then y'all figure out the rest from there. Like, in between I referenced the overtime game against the Clippers early on, where Markelle Fultz said it's Markelle Fultz time. But like, aside from that, like, he's been very good at setting the table. Like, they dropped 50 in the first quarter against Atlanta, and Fultz was a figurative and literal driver of their early quarter success. And so when you're able to get that kind of pick and roll play from Markelle Fultz, and then you can also just flow into Cole Anthony, hey, do some stuff while one or both of the star young wings sit. Like, I think they're starting to find the balance. You can get to those pockets where it's a lot of dribbling in place, particularly with Cole. You give him a switch, he's just going to boogie, and you just got to hope that shot goes in. But I think they're starting to find it. I hope that answers your question.
No, I mean, that was kind of the blend I kind of liked at the start of the season when I had to apologize to Magic and Magic fans. As far as, okay, we have what we're doing. We have movement. We have Paolo making plays. We have Franz making plays. And now these guards can just be themselves. And so if they have it cooking, all right, y'all can finish a play. Or if y'all got it rolling, now y'all can just go into your pick and roll, have fun. But if y'all don't, we have something else. So it's nice to see that come back. It's nice to see it not just be, hey, Paolo and Franz, please make something happen. Like, I feel like that's a bonus. And where those reps probably help those two out. And then I think big with their bigs, I think everyone just kind of brings something different to the table. So they're getting back to that identity of making things work. I mean, if you told me they'd be closing out a game in Boston with Cole Anthony screening for Markelle Fultz, I'd be like, how is this going to work? But it did. So salute to them. How did you feel about the defense?
It's, there's so much length on the floor. And now you're putting Markelle Fultz at the head of that, man. Like, one, I'm just glad Markelle Fultz is back and healthy, first and foremost. But, like, even as he was making, like, the initial comeback after the whole the Philly stint and all that good stuff, and he gets to Orlando, a whole lot of the focus, and understandably so, but a lot of the focus was like, okay, he's in Orlando now. Is he going to shoot? What is the jumper going to look like? How many shots will he make? How comfortable will he do with pull-ups? The defense has just kind of always been there for Markelle. Like, he's just quietly been one of the better guard defenders in basketball when upright. And it's been fun to see him like, all right, bet, I'm just going to hound at the point of attack. And if by some chance I get beat, here's just a whole host of 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", 7 foot, 7'3" dudes behind me. And it's just fun to watch them kind of funnel guys or just toggle between switches. And now you try to pick on me. Here comes this help pinch again. The Magic are doing the thing right now. I'm very impressed. And I'm glad you brought up the big man room and how versatile it's been so far. I just forgot to shout out Mo Bamba, who after a, let's just say, a not so great start to the season, he is turning it around. And he just adds a different dynamic to the big man room. Gives him a pop threat, gives him another shot blocker, a guy that can roll in from, you know, crashed offensive glass and get you extra possessions that way. So he's doing his job. He's responded after a cold start. Hey, man, the Magic are, as of recording, let's see if we can get it here. They're 2.5 out of the play-in right now. And this is without Wendell Carter Jr. When he comes back, we'll keep an eye on it.
Did you just take all of your Piston stock and just reinvest it in the Magic? Or how did that transaction work?
No. I just, I enjoy what the Magic are trying to put together. That's all. I still have faith in the Pistons moving forward, but.
Okay. So you're saying Mo Bamba has pros.
Okay. I am going to leave that one alone. I think that's a fine point to transition to the teams that make us think. Can we talk about the Chicago Bulls real quick?
Ooh, buddy, I'm interested to see where you go with this because, yeah, I heard Goran Dragic talk about the Chicago Bulls.
Yes.
That let me know exactly where the Chicago Bulls are at.
So, Goran Dragic has talked about Chicago Bulls. DeMar DeRozan has talked about Chicago Bulls. Not too long ago, Zach LaVine hit us with a Billy got to sleep with that. Billy Donovan has talked about the Chicago Bulls. I would also like to talk about the Chicago Bulls and say this isn't it. This isn't. I don't see the ceiling for this group, especially with Lonzo just out for the foreseeable future. I don't think it's fair to ask DeMar to carry the load that he's been tasked with carrying because Vooch has been uneven and because Zach LaVine has been uneven. And we, again, for the 84th time on this podcast, I will say you just don't know what the knee is going to be like on any given night. That's not his fault, but that is the reality right now. In addition to some of the late game decision-making that we've seen from Zach LaVine, whether he's healthy or not, the defense had been solid for most of the season. They were a top 10 unit heading into the game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, without Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. And after the Timberwolves put up 150 points in regulation against the Chicago Bulls, the Bulls are no longer a top 10 defense. They are no longer a top half of the league defense in terms of defensive rating. That's a wild one game swing. But like that just has to be the inflection point. Like if there wasn't one before that, if this version of the Wolves drops 150 on you in regulation, it's time to ask yourself some hard questions. It's time to ask yourself, what are we doing here? What are we building? And in the best case, what does that even look like? Again, a lot of this is out of Chicago's control just from a health perspective. And so I don't want to be too hard on them within that context. But like Vooch is a free agent. DeMar is, what, a year out from being able to test the market if he wants to? Where are the Bulls in the hierarchy of the East right now? And then you look at the young talent on the roster. I like Dalen Terry. I love Ayo Dosunmu. I like Patrick Williams, and he's played well as of late. Do any of those guys scream all-star potential? I can't firmly say yes right now. And of those three, do any of them scream, we can headline a package with this guy to get us a star to complement what we have? I can't firmly say yes right now. And if that's where you are, and Chicago now on this four-game slide, they are now in the play-in, out of the play-in, excuse me. I just have to look like, I don't see why you try to salvage this version of the team.
Well, let's have some fun. Let me try and figure out how to counter. What do you go with? Because the tricky part for me is the Bulls didn't necessarily mean to do this. They just kind of were able to do this. They had Zach. They went and got Vooch. That allowed them to get DeMar. Where's the pivot point?
I think it's with those second two. Cause I don't think you bring Vooch back.
Okay.
And I think DeMar is the best guy you can move.
For what though?
I think in theory that kicks off the, I guess you can't even call it a retool at that point. Like you still have Zach, but like I don't think that's enough to put you in that upper tier in the East.
Yeah.
Like I think you,
but that's my counter to the whole let's blow it up thing. Like, I get it, but where are you going? You know what's behind that door. You were just there. You were just there hoping. Look how much they had to do to get Vooch.
Yeah.
I don't know if they want to go all the way back there. But I don't know how they fix this. Because if you're talking about effort and we're not playing for each other at this point in the season, that's not ideal.
Hell, y'all ain't playing for each other around Christmas time, man. That's when you pass the ball a little bit more so you can get that gift. Get the Oculus.
Oh, I'm leaving that there. But, when you give up 150 points.
Man, they went zone in that game. I was hosting a watch party for that. They went zone. I was like, wait a minute. This is not something that Billy Donovan does. Let me go to Synergy right now. Let me see where their zone frequency is. Let me make sure I'm not tripping. And they had played zone. I think it was like literally 1% of their defensive possessions this year. I was like, oh, they are really searching if this is what they're on.
Man, Billy Donovan said, we can change any scheme you want. We're not playing hard. It doesn't matter. And I'm like, well, who has the positivity beacon in this locker room?
Dog. Goran Dragic is, what is this, the third team in the Rose League? They just ain't playing together. I don't get it.
Maybe he's seen that. Maybe he's the problem. Oh. No, I wouldn't say that to Goran. It was just a Taylor Swift joke that I couldn't pass up. No, so you're done with the Bulls.
I'm done with this iteration of the Bulls. And I say that like I am done. And like, if I were even close to being qualified to run an NBA team, like I would be saying, okay, what can we get for Vooch? What can we get for DeMar? And then just kind of setting it up, especially with this draft class. And I say that with the context of Orlando has Chicago's first round pick. I think it's top four protected. So they have to land in the good spot to keep that pick. But like, I would try to replenish the pick pool and pivot from there if I was them. Do I think Chicago's going to do that? I highly doubt it. And that makes me even more sad. Because I do think they're going to continue to ride this out and try to turn it around. And I just don't know what turning it around looks like with this cast. Like, I think it's different if Lonzo was there. I think they'd just be better if Lonzo was there first and foremost. But like, if Lonzo was slated to return like next week, then I would understand being optimistic. Okay, let's wait. Let's let Christmas pass. Let's see what the next stretch of games looks like. We'll reevaluate in mid-January or February, whatever. But without even that as a buffer, like I just don't see it.
That's the other tricky part. And I'm trying to put my head in like a front office mind frame. You put this together and one of the pieces hasn't been around. So while you know, hey, this kind of stinks, I don't actually know what it looks like.
Yeah.
And for what I remember, it looked pretty good. But unfortunately, it's not like a Denver scenario where you can just say, hey, we have Nikola Jokic, so Jamal Murray, we can wait for you to come back and then see what it looks like. It's kind of like a, okay.
You got the wrong Nikola.
This is...
I'm sorry, continue. Well, we have reached an intermission in the dunker spot. Has slipped that one in. But yeah, I just have concerns with where Chicago is right now, man. Like I don't see it. And I say this, they may just reel off 8 straight now. It make me sound stupid, but like as of 6:13 Eastern, like I don't see the upside with trying to piece this together. And like, again, it further complicates itself with Vooch is a free agent this offseason. Like you got to make a decision on him in the next month and a half. And then you add in the DeMar portion. Like DeMar has been all-star good. He's been fringe all-NBA good. He hasn't been what he was last year. And like, that's not his fault either. DeMar DeRozan is very far. DeMar DeRozan is last on the list of problems for the Chicago Bulls. Let me just be clear about that one. But like him going from holy crap, he's never missed a shot in the clutch to holy crap, he only misses 2 out of 10 shots in the clutch has been enough to drop Chicago from fighting for the one seed to this.
Yeah, they got to fix the defense. They got to play with some more effort and some heart. And I don't know how many times they need to get these kind of losses before you wake up. And I'm the eternal optimist when it comes to these things. You're a player two away from flipping things, and you got to keep pushing. That's the player coach mindset of me. I'm sorry. But, I mean, this is a team that went from 2 overtime losses to 2 massive blowout losses. Which tells me
it slipped.
Something's off. Atlanta overtime loss. At home against New York, overtime loss. Play the next 2 days later, they beat you up and then Minnesota drops 150 on your head. Yeah. 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 You better get your souls right in Miami and Atlanta.
Yeah.
Get it.
Well, I guess, wow. All right. Well, friends, okay. Steve, did you have a team that was making you think, aside from the Chicago Bulls?
I have some questions.
What you got?
It's a tough part for me. Do you think Utah can hang on?
They can? You know, we talk about the playoffs being such a matchup ordeal. Are we going to talk about like how weirdly bad of a matchup they are for New Orleans? Like, that's so odd.
Hey, every team's got a team. It's just no matter who it is. Every team has got a team where it's like, we just can't beat them. You hope that team is bad enough that you don't see them in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's just Zion barreling into Walker Kessler. Walker's like, you're good. That's cool and all, but you still 6'6".
I remember when we were in Memphis, for some reason, we could not score more than like 80 points against New Orleans. It did not matter what variation of who was playing. It was just going to be disgusting and ugly. And it was like, dog, still?
What is anyways, it about
them? Yeah, it's annoying. I understand that. So Utah we're okay with. Do you think Golden State can figure this out without Steph? Or is this going to be a blow?
I mean, it's going to be a blow either way. I mean, Steph is
a blow they can afford.
No, I got you. I mean, if Jordan Poole's going to drop 43, they might be all right. But no, I do worry about like what the Warriors look like. Because quietly, it's Steph out and like they're working Andrew Wiggins back in or will be soon. It's been kind of a stretch without him. I think they can be okay. Like, I think the offense can function. They're not going to be at historic levels like they are with Steph on the floor, but I think they can function enough. They have to continue getting the defense together. And I'm glad they aren't where they were to kick off the season at the very least. Like, I trust Golden State to be all right.
Is the East play-in just going to be full of sadness?
I mean, not if Orlando gets in. They'd be the happiest team in the bunch, right? The vibes are what they are in Atlanta. But, well, I don't think the Pacers are a sad team. Toronto, though, as they've lost five straight. That's a team that just requires a pod.
A whole pod?
That requires a pod. There's so much happening with Toronto. Everything's just weird.
You want to give us the cliff notes?
I mean, I can't. Like, I guess the cliff note would be they have not won a game since OG Anunoby went down with the hip injury. They're relying a lot on Fred VanVleet and also Pascal Siakam. And they're also trying to find the role for Scotty Barnes while Scotty Barnes is also trying to figure out how aggressive he wants to be on either end on any given night.
Sounds like the Toronto Raptors.
It's just been kind of it's been a tough watch.
My alarms go off when you lose a whole homestand. And when you go 0-3 on a homestand, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's tough to do.
It's not good. It's not a good feeling. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really have any teams that are making me think.
Okay. That's fair. Thought I'd leave that up for you.
I did my Wolves and Wizard drain already.
Oh, that you have. Got a lot of positive perception on that, oddly enough. Who are the players that have caught your eyes of late?
Well, talked about half of them already, but salute to Joel Embiid for scoring 30 or more in 12 of his last 14 games, including all six games in December up to this point. Salute to Fred VanVleet, who is being dependent on, to score 20 plus in four straight games, averaging 27.3 over his last six. And then LeBron James, 30 points or more in four straight games in year 20. I tipped the cap.
That's insane. The race to Kareem is among us.
Who caught your eye, man?
All right. Well, I guess to go on the theme of Eastern Conference win streaks, I suppose, I should note that the Heat have moved up to seventh now after winning four straight. Tyler Hero has been a big part of that one. During this four-game stretch, well, during the last three games of this four-game stretch, rather, 32-5-4, had 35-9 made threes against OKC. The literal next night dropped the career high 41 points and 10 threes against Houston. The shot profiles become a little bit more balanced. Eight threes a game, eight twos a game for him. Starting to turn some of those long pull-up twos into pull-up threes. He's knocking those down. The playmaking development continuing with him. Still another level of reach in terms of decisiveness, but you see the reads are starting to be made with him. I'm encouraged by his progress as an on-ball creator. Bojan Bogdanović, averaging 23-4-3 since Cade Cunningham has been down. That's a 19-game sample. Well over 55% from two, well over 40% from three during this stretch, putting him in some elite territory right now. I want to give a shout-out to Dylan Brooks, who is averaging over 20 points per game in December right now, nearly 39% from three on over 8 attempts per game. He has been taking on the toughest perimeter matchups for Memphis all season long.
Wait a minute. Is this Dylan Brooks' praise?
It is Dylan Brooks' praise. Now,
so it's Dylan Brooks' time.
It is, in fact, Dylan Brooks' time in this very specific context. Now, that does include the Bam headlock and also Chris Middleton just wanting to hit him with a shoestring tackle in the first quarter of a game that the Bucks were blasted in. The mind games are still going on. But Dylan Brooks has been hooping. We'll give him his props. To the Minnesota front, Jaden McDaniels, quietly been one of the best wing defenders in basketball this year. career high in points, averaging 11 points a game, 62.5% from two. The Euro step and the drives, just the drives in general from Jaden McDaniels have been so much better than last year. Has this nice little Euro step he loves getting to. Probably spams it a little bit at this point, but you find a move that works, you keep doing it until they can't stop it. Averaging over a steal and over a block per game this year. Plus 1.8 in defensive estimated plus minus EPM that ties him with Paul George. Just give you a rough estimate of like where he's been at defensively. Tied with Paul George. He's right under Jaren Jackson in that metric. Right under Anthony Davis and Jared Allen in that metric. Keep an eye on Jaden McDaniels. Like, the Wolves have been they've also been an interesting watch this year as they try to figure things out with their new roster. But Jaden McDaniels is making some steps. So I want to give him some props. And last guy on the list was Josh Okogie, averaging 21 minutes a game in December, 10.6 boards, still on the block, averaging nearly 3 offensive rebounds per game this month. That leads a team with DeAndre Ayton on it, which speaks to where he's been on the energy front. Had 5 offensive rebounds against the Clippers on Thursday. He had 4 against New Orleans on Saturday, including a late game stretch where it just felt like the Pelicans just could not end a possession to save their lives. And Josh Okogie was like directly responsible for that. I've enjoyed his minutes, and then you add in the defense that he brings. Like, it's been fun to watch him give Phoenix a little bit of juice off the bench. Do you want to close this out with some free throws?
Do you have free throws, Nekias?
I do indeed have a few free throws.
Oh, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
It's up to you. You know, how you feeling? How many do you have?
I have a few.
Ah, I see. Well, I guess I can knock mine. Out then. Better chance at heroics: Christian Wood or Jakobi Meyers?
Oh, buddy! Wait a minute. I assume you're talking about Christian Wood's
the Carlton shot against Evan Mobley.
Over Evan Mobley, yeah, where he passed. Oh no!
Yeah.
I would go with Christian Wood. Jakobi Meyers was trying to do entirely too much.
If Christian Wood wasn't?
Yeah, but I mean, Christian Wood at least had potential for a positive outcome.
But you're saying collateral to the wrong team is not what you would call a positive outcome?
I mean, but that's not like his thing, you know? Yeah. It was a bad decision, but that's not like his thing. That's not his primary duty in life.
Can I just say, I'm just mad at everybody on the Patriots side for that play. There was 3 seconds left in that game, and you ran a draw. If you're going to run a draw with 3 seconds left, just kneel the ball and go to overtime. How is that the decision? You're not trying to score on this play. If you're not trying to score on this play, kneel and go to overtime. Why are you calling a draw? And I don't know what Jakobi thought that was going to do, though. That you can't do that. But also, he shouldn't have even been in that position. Christian Wood, that was funny. Anyway, second free throw for you.
Why did he do that? No, I'm still going Christian Wood because Jakobi shouldn't have been in that spot, man. He just did too much.
What a time. Anyway, second question. Why did Wally Szczerbiak do all that?
Oh, when he went off on the rant against Tyrese?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Where did that come from?
I'm not sure.
I'm so confused at how that even became a thing. Like, that wasn't... That just felt like a lot. I don't. At any rate, over under 0.5 All Stars for the Knicks this year.
Ooh, that's very difficult. Well, Randall could always sneak in there just because of the front court deal. I feel like I'm trying to pull up my All Stars. I don't know if Brunson's one. Yeah, over. I'll go over. That's fine. Okay.
All right. Rank the vibes of these fan bases. Toronto, Chicago, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Vibes of the fan bases?
Of the fan bases, yes.
Give the four to me again.
Toronto, Chicago, Minnesota, and Los Angeles, the Lakers.
All right. So we're going to go bottom to the top. I think Bulls fans are down bad right now.
Okay.
So we're going to go four. I think Toronto is going to be three.
Okay.
For me, I think there's anger and angst, but belief and hope that they could just turn around. I'm going to go with, I'm going to go Minnesota 2.
Okay.
I mean, their team did just score 150 points. So that should last you for at least a week. Maybe a few more days if Luka Garza keeps doing stuff. You never know how that works. I'm going to go Lakers 1. They'll always find a way to keep their vibes high. And then just have moments during games where they're upset and then after games upset. But then that's it. Afterwards, nah, we good.
We still got LeBron, what you mean?
Yeah, we'll be all right. We'll figure it out. You seen Wenyan Gabriel?
Fair enough. Better defender, Kevin Durant or Jason Tatum?
KD.
Okay. Better defender, Ja Morant or Jamal Murray?
Yikes. Current version?
Yeah, right now.
Gotten out. Ja Morant.
Alrighty. rank these players by skill. Devin Booker, Paolo Banchero, Kemba Walker, Trey Burke, Carmelo Anthony.
See, you're not stopping either. give me the list again. It was Melo, Devin Booker, Kemba.
Trey Burke and Paolo Banchero.
All right, so Trey Burke, you're going to have to go last. My apologies.
That's tough.
Kemba, you're going to go fourth. We're going to go Paolo 3, Melo 2, Devin Booker 1.
All right, got you. Last one I had. Better timeout entertainment, TikTok guessing game or hashtag that dance team?
TikTok guessing game.
Okay, well.
I have no spirit.
All right. Well, that's all I have on the list. What are your free throws for me?
Who expands first, the NBA or the WNBA?
Oh God, I hate this already. I have thoughts on that. That's going to be a separate podcast, too. I'm going to go with the NBA.
The NBA? All right. Do you respect the game, Nikias?
I respect everything except kickball violations.
Oh, Lord. Who do you trust to contribute to winning more? Jeff Saturday as a coach or Udonis Haslem as a player?
Wow. as far as I know, Udonis Haslem has not blown a 33-point lead at the half, so I'm going to go with UD as a player. At least he'll take a charge.
Okay. Who thought they could be who more? Torrey Craig to Jay Crowder or Josh Okogie to Torrey Craig?
The answer is yes. I probably lean Torrey Craig to Jay Crowder.
Okay. Were the Lakers slick let the Anthony Davis injury news out during that World Cup final?
Yes, absolutely.
Who has better vibes? Which locker room has better vibes? Chicago or Toronto?
Which locker room has better vibes?
Yes.
Toronto.
Okay. Do you think that Lauri Markkanen learned the golden rule of the NBA?
Oh, God. I'm going to say no.
Never buy a house. Bought a house, had it all planned out. They traded that man. If you were the Rockets, would you keep Jayshon Tate or KJ Martin?
Oh, man. I'd probably keep KJ.
Okay. It's a scarier quote. Kevin Durant saying, I'm starting to understand the game on a different level than I did before after what he did to Detroit. Or Kawhi Leonard after dropping 30 saying it was just how the game played out.
Kawhi is such a funny quote, man. Probably Kevin Durant.
Okay. Better takedown, Chris Middleton on Dylan Brooks or Zion on Chris Paul?
Wow. Wow. Probably Chris on Dylan Brooks.
Which one hurt your feelings more?
hurt my feelings? I think the Chris one just had me in a state of shock. I was like, wait a minute, what is this? It was like 2 minutes into the game. What? How are you this mad? Like, what are you even? Why?
How on brand is Tibbs after another win? I believe it was 7 in a row. Saying winning streaks don't mean anything. This game doesn't mean anything. Come the next game.
Oh, God. I wouldn't even want to win at that point. You know, I'll show you what means nothing.
Is it more on brand than when he was asked if he watched the World Cup? No, I'm worried about the Pacers.
Well, okay, that's probably, but yeah. Yeah, that's Tibbs.
Daniel House Jr. said the Sixers' chemistry is like a gumbo pot. The longer you let the seasoning sit, the better the gumbo hit. Do you believe in the Sixers gumbo?
I had like 6 different jokes to that quote, and I can't say any of them. In order to keep the clean rating intact, of all the literally anyone else on the Sixers roster could have made that quote. And
do you believe in the Sixers gumbo?
Do I believe in their gumbo? No, I just off principle, I can't.
Okay, power rate these seasonings. Which team is more seasoned? The Bucks, the Sixers, the Lakers, or the Raptors?
Oh, God.
And for listeners out there, the seasoning refers to their offense. How well seasoned is their offense?
I think we appreciate the clarification there. I would say, Bucks, Sixers, Lakers, Raptors.
Oh, okay. Can you name the 7 teams in the West who have 10 or more wins at home?
This sounds disgusting. 7 teams that have 10 or more wins at home?
Mm-hmm.
Are the Kings one? Well, the Kings have to be one of them. All that beam lighting.
Kings are not.
Oh, they're not. Wow.
Nope.
Well, that's a wild pump fake. All right. So no to the Kings. The Pelicans?
That is one of them.
Okay, so you got the Pelicans. Are the Clippers on the list?
They are.
All right, the Warriors have to be on the list because they're just a god-awful road team.
That's 3 out of 7.
Okay. The Suns, I would imagine.
That's 4. You got 3 left.
All right, let's have some fun with this one. The Nuggets?
9 wins, no.
Tough. All right. How many guesses do I have here?
You have 3 left.
Okay.
Win or go home.
Win or go home. Oh, man. I don't like this at all. Let's see. I don't think the Lakers have won enough to have 10. Where are the Wolves?
Not one of them.
Okay. Well, I have lost. That's unfortunate. The Grizzlies.
Yeah. Put some respect on FedEx.
This is nasty work.
Utah and Dallas.
I was about to say Dallas. I wouldn't have got Utah, though.
It's all right, man.
Tough.
It's all right. Is Kyle Kuzma doing the influencer version of that Eric Bledsoe tweet?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. LeBron said he would stretch before going to sleep and when he woke up when he was 10. Do you buy it?
Dude. All right, man. No, I don't. I just have that NBA TV screen meme in my head now. Dog.
Come What's on, more man. Important? What's more important? Eye test or real skill?
God. No. I, for one, think analytics are more important to both.
Okay. Was Kemba Walker written off as unplayable by casuals, or was it plus minus mentality that did him in?
I guess it's more of the former than the latter. I don't. God. Yeah, can we just be honest about like what happened? Like, never mind. I'm not going on that rant. Continue.
Well, why is there a picture of Kevin Hart, Ludacris, Lisa Leslie, Julius Erving, and The Undertaker?
Can I ask a follow-up? So one, I don't know. Can I ask a follow-up?
What's up?
Which person throws you off the most in that picture?
Oh, it's absolutely Mark.
I'm just confused at like what the outing even is.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to know, but I did not expect him to get invited to the cookout.
We've seen those takes. I don't know. Seen his fictitious brother's takes too. They neither one of them want to be around. Yeah, okay. Continue.
That's all I had, man.
All right. Well. Oh, geez. The Blazers not having the 10 wins at home. Is it the carpet?
All right, man. We're not going to just take us home. You know, disrespect the Portland International Airport and the carpet. I'm not having this right now. Folks, good day.
Sound like they're ready to fly good out, day. I guess. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have not already. We're having fun in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. Don't open the chat at work, I guess, but we're having plenty of analysis. Also, antics, food takes, dairy products, hashtag hold on. Anyway, get in there. We're having a lot of fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
This man could talk about the carpet. We could have talked about speed painting.